What's for dinner? What's for dinner?
Talking about what's ever on their minds. Talking about what's ever on their minds. Talking about what's ever on their
minds. That's what we're doing. That was an abrupt stop to the song there. Hey guys, welcome to a very familiar show. And I say that because it's familiar to me and to you. If you were listening to the episode a couple of weeks ago with David Gee, you'll recall that Allison, David, who is a comedian I was working with in Vegas, and myself all drove home from Vegas together and decided to do a podcast in the car. Well, guess what's going on now, guys? Deja ho? I'm in a car now, driving home from Vegas with another comedian who's named David. What are the odds?
You didn't tell me all this going into this.
I know. Surprise, motherfucker.
I thought I was going to be the first person in this scenario. This is old hat, apparently.
Well, you are the first person to do this in the car without Allison.
Oh, okay. All right.
Actually, no, I take that back. Richie was, but that podcast didn't come out right. So you're the official first broadcast one. Guys, I'm sitting here with David Williamson, or Dave Williamson. Dave Williamson.
Yeah.
That's how you go by professionally.
Yeah, both work.
Both work?
Yeah.
All right.
My headshot says Dave.
Well, then we'll call you Dave.
All righty.
Dave Williamson. Yeah, we are in traffic in Prim, Nevada. We pulled over to get something to eat because we were starving. And we said, let's fucking do a podcast. Yeah, but Dave and I were in Vegas for the World Series of Comedy.
Fourth annual.
Mm-hmm. And Dave and I both made it into the semifinals, but did not make it to that top three in the coveted top spot to win what?
I don't know. What was the prize?
Work.
Yes, work.
As Joe Lauer, who is the executive producer of the festival, would say, that's how stupid comics are. We're competing for work.
Yes, Joe Lauer has said that probably about 400 or 500 times on stage.
Yes, and it never gets old.
Nope.
No.
So it's a good festival, though, man. It's very worthwhile if that's what you're looking for. If you want road work, I say it was probably one of the more beneficial contests or festivals in the country.
Yeah. No, honestly, it's I walked to, because the whole reason I did it was because there were a lot of bookers involved that I've never met. I've never worked their clubs. So even though I've been, you know, doing this 20 years or so, there's still rooms I would love to play. So I do not mind shelling out some money for a hotel and submission fees and showcasing for these people.
Well, sure. And when you think about it in the big scheme of things, because, you know, a lot of people will complain about, oh, you shouldn't have to pay money for them to make money and do. But it's a small investment to fast track getting in front of multiple bookers at one place. When you think about all the times comics are willing to just jump at driving someone to do a guest spot to be seen, or we send gazillion emails that never get answered.
Right.
You know, this is an actual way where you're going to get results. And if you just go and do your job and have a good set, a workable set, you know.
Totally.
And it's also important to go and not be a jackass in front of people and show them that you're professional and someone that they would like to have at their club for a weekend, you know.
Was somebody a jackass this week?
There's always someone. Actually, I think it was pretty tame this week. I didn't hear any terrible stories.
Well, you've done this, what, three or four times? Or two, three times?
Yeah, this is the fourth year, and I've done it all 4 years.
Oh, you've done it all 4 years?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'll tell you, man, like, you know, so this time you and I, we finished in the top nine.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 years ago, I came third. And then the other 2 years, I got knocked out in earlier rounds. But every year, no matter where I finish, I've always managed to pick up at least three clubs that I hadn't worked before, you know?
Cool.
Because, you know, if you just go and you do a good set and, like I said, network and be professional, you'll get the work.
Yeah, well, I think I definitely picked up like three or four new rooms from doing this. So people listening, I might be coming to your area now.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to the World Series of Comedy.
Yes.
Yeah. But it is fun. Like, whenever comics get together, it really does feel like camp.
Yeah, it's like sleepaway camp.
It really, like, there's, Dave and I also do the, last year you did for the first time, but I've done all 3 years, the San Luis Obispo Comedy Festival.
Yeah.
Slow Fest, which we did a podcast from this year as well. But were you on that one?
No, because I was staying at the campground with my family. I wasn't staying at the hotel, so.
That's right. I want to talk about that later. But yeah, that to me is like the funnest festival I've ever been to, because everybody is staying, because like the Tuscany where we're staying in Vegas, it's a rather kind of big, I would say big resort.
Spread out,
thank you. And so, you know, I don't think, I roomed with one comedian, but I like wasn't near any others. There was one kind of central room where comedians might gather to. But at Slow, literally, they take an entire wing of the hotel in the back where we're not bothering anybody, and all the comedians stay there. So it is like sleeping in a big summer camp cabin.
Yeah, and it's like a
cabin.
Big, it's like a big cake party.
Yeah.
Afterwards, everyone just kind of hangs and shoots the shit.
Drink and smoke.
In the World Series of Comedy was like that the first 2 years at the old place they had, because there wasn't anything else to do. It was hard to walk places, and the rooms were a lot closer, and they put everyone in the same building. But now at the new place, I think it works better because the showroom's better and there's a casino and it draws better crowds. And the bookers probably prefer to be there where the casino is. But you do lose a little bit of that camaraderie where everyone's just kind of hanging out with everyone, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of noticed that. But when we were together, it was a lot of fun. And it was kind of cool, too, because, I don't know, for me, I've been doing this over 20 years. I sometimes forget that. I don't want this to sound wrong, but I have a reputation. You know, I still consider myself just a struggling road comic.
Yeah.
But when I got here, and there were a lot of younger, newer comics here, which is always fun to see. It's always fun to see who's kind of coming up through the ranks.
Yeah, they were all referring to you as Papa Flip, I think, right?
Well, they were just like, we went to the meet and greet, which is where, like, the bookers and agents have a chance to talk to the comics individually for a couple of minutes. So you're literally like standing in line to talk to some bookers, and I'm standing behind this one girl, and she was commenting about how somebody's business card was what's it called, when it's up and down, is that horizontal or vertical?
That's vertical, yeah.
How their business card was vertical. And I said, oh, so is mine. And she turned, she goes, oh my god, you're Flip Schultz. Flip Schultz is right here. Oh my god, here, please take my card. And I was like, oh shit. I didn't realize that was an impressive thing.
Yeah, man, I can't believe you made her do your laundry.
Well, she wanted to. You know, she was she wanted to be close to my boxers.
To your essence.
I am missing a couple of pairs of underwear, though.
I told you I'd give them back.
Well, and some of the hair. You took off my pube brush. My pube brush. I have a pube brush.
Yeah, nice.
Did I mention that?
I saw it. It's actually a whole set of brushes that you use for different parts of your genital region. It lays out like a set of knives.
It's Ginju.
Ginju, thank you, yeah.
No, not Ginju, Skinju.
What is Skinju?
Skinju? All That'd right. be a great name for circumcision tools. Skimju.
There you go. Are we delirious yet on this car ride or what?
Oh, dude, we're not even fucking 20 minutes in.
All right, we just passed a guy who pulled over for his girlfriend to take a picture of him on the side of the highway with Prim in the background. I think they think they're in Vegas, but they're in Prim.
Man, I thought Vegas would be a lot bigger than this.
Yeah. Look at the traffic is moving now.
There we go, buddy. Well, this is safe. We're just driving with microphones in our... What do these people think next to us and we're talking in a microphone?
Want to interview him?
Yeah.
Next time we get into traffic, because we are going to hit traffic in about 10 miles, we should just roll down the window and interview people.
Okay. All right. But we'll make up like really random questions. Like we're German travel tour guides or something.
Do you look more German than I?
Okay. When I was, yeah, this is how white I am. I was going downtown to do a spot with Brian Moot not too long ago. Okay. And, you know, Brian's a white guy too. And we were in a, we were in downtown L.A. So a couple streets that are a little sketchy down there. And we're parking, and I had the windows down, and this homeless guy walks up. I think he was, like, Hispanic. And he walks up, and he goes, hey, man, do you guys, he starts giving us his spiel for some money, you know?
Yeah.
And we're both staring at him. And we're so white, and we're so probably in the wrong area of downtown L.A. This guy all of a sudden couldn't believe that we were there. Because he just all of a sudden looks at him and goes, oh, I'm sorry, man. Do you guys speak English? And I'm like thinking, like, why would we be the ones that don't speak English? And then we both realized it's because he thought we were so white that we were like Dutch
tourist
or some shit. Yeah.
Yeah, wohl nicht, nein, nein. Just gibberish. Yeah, downtown. I like downtown LA because it kind of reminds me of New York.
Yeah, because of the urine.
the urine, the homeless, and the fact that I can't think of something funny to make a third.
You're on your own today, man. My brain's fried from 4 days in Vegas. This is going to be the least witty podcast we've ever done.
Yeah, obviously you don't listen to our shows. It was like a party week, too. Like, that's another thing. You get comedians together, and I'm not a big drinker. You know, and those who listen know, I am a marijuana smoker. But when I was here, man, I was just pounding them back. About getting around comedians, start telling stories, busting balls, and you want to have a drink in your hand.
Well, yeah. I think that, a lot of times what we do is we're on the road a lot, but you're not necessarily on the road with your buddies, you know?
Right.
So you're usually with, like, a local MC who you're meeting for the first time, and then, whether you're headlining or featuring, you know, it's somebody who's a different level from you, you know?
Yeah.
So you might be someone to get along with and hang out with, but when you do something like this and there's 101 comics and, you're bound to have a handful of guys that are like, guys you've been buddies with for a long time.
Totally.
Because you're at the same level. You've been going, it's just fun to all hang out.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's very true. Like, cause there were a lot of guys that, a lot of us, you don't get in the same room that often. Mm-mm. You know? And even I worked the improv at Harris a lot, and I had my buddy Eric Pasoja there, who was featuring. So he came over, and like Eric and I, we're L.A. comedy friends, you know? We always hang out in L.A., we write together in L.A., but we've never, this with the exception of one time when we just met each other, never hung out outside of L.A., so this was great for us, too, just to like throw back some beers.
Yeah.
And just...
Well, not only that, but there's like bookers there, so you can kind of write it off as, hey, I'm networking, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, let's go out and get some beers. And even though, you're just going out because you like hanging out with that person, you can justify dropping a little money on buying some drinks and staying out late on the fact that you're building a rapport with, someone else in the industry.
Exactly. Ed Zachary.
That's how I convince myself that the hangover's worth it.
Hangovers are always
And there were some good stories, some good Vegas stories. I won't name names, but one particular person associated with the festival.
Tell that.
I don't want to name names.
No.
But I'll tell the story.
You're talking about the one you told me already, right?
With the tattoo.
Yeah. Oh, he just gave it away.
I'm sorry. So the booker, it was a booker, I will tell you that much. It was his first time at this festival. And I had a friend in town. Who had a friend in town. So it was like all like bunch of friends. So people meeting for the first time. And we went out for a very crazy night on the town. And I lost them at one point.
Where exactly were you?
We went to a casino. We went to a piano bar. And then we ended up at a strip club. And then,
the whole time you guys were drinking and
partying. Yeah, just drinking. Well, he had been drinking all day.
This is your friend or the friend of
no,
the friend?
No, this was the booker.
Oh, the booker.
Had been drinking all day. And then...
Why don't we call it booker, friend one, and booker, friend, and friend of friend.
Okay. Well, my friend called it a night because she was sick. So then her friend stayed out, and then I lost them. So I was with some other buddies.
So you lost booker and friend
of friend. Yeah, I got separated from them. And so it was late. I wanted to go back. We had the semis the following night. I'm like, I need to go to sleep at least by 5 in the morning. And so I went to bed. And then I get a text message the next morning from my friend. She goes, hey, are you guys okay? And I go, oh, no. Her friend never made it home, that means. So I went over there and to their room. And she had just gotten back with the booker. And they had two nice new tattoos that they decided was a good idea at about 5 in the morning.
That's so fucking funny. And what were the tattoos of,
Yeah, it took up their entire foot.
What?
And it was, or one side of their foot, and it was the date.
The date?
Yeah, it said 9/28/13.
Oh, that's the tattoo that
they
got?
That's the tattoo. And I was like, why'd you guys do that? They said, we have no idea.
So we'll always remember the mistake that we made.
We'll always remember this. Absolutely random day that has no reason to be remembered.
Did they even hook up or anything?
I don't have any information on that.
I'm like, at least that's... You got something out of it aside from a shitty tattoo.
Who knows? We'll never know.
God. And it's the entire side of their foot?
Yeah, it's pretty sizable. It's not like on one toe or something. It's like on the foot.
My friend actually got the tattoo on his toes. On his left foot, he got L-E-F-T, and on the right toes, R-I-G-H-T.
All right. That's a step away from being Tupac.
That is. That is. Do you have any tattoos?
No, man. No, I never did that.
I got one.
I've made, you know, I've done dumb stuff as a kid that I thought was really cool, but never anything permanent. I, you know, when I was in college, I had an earring and would bleach my hair and things like that, but no permanent phases. I don't know, man. I think even if I decided to get a tattoo, I would be so picky about it. It would take me so long to like choose it, and I'd put it off, and then by the time I wanted to get it, I probably wouldn't like that tattoo anymore.
Yeah, I was pretty careful about which one I wanted to get, but I'm very happy with it still to this day.
All right, well, there you go.
Yeah, I got a tattoo of Hervé Velichez. So I got a tattoo of tattoo.
I didn't know that. Are you serious?
No.
Okay. No. What does that say about you, Flip, that I believe that?
It says either A, I'm a damn good actor, or B, I have a reputation that would seem normal to get a Hervé Velichez.
Is that on your business card that you gave the girl? Would totally get a tattoo of tattoo.
Actually, I had a bit where I said I want to get a tattoo of give me a random celebrity.
Give you a random celebrity?
Just a game of random celebrity.
Pat Sajak.
I want to get a tattoo of Pat Sajak's face on my ass to the point where it's so big that my ass crack actually splits his face in half. So whenever I take a dump, it looks like he's throwing up a Snickers bar.
Okay.
Maybe a Baby Ruth. Mounds bar.
Mounds.
Mounds?
That's, yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah, because Baby Ruth is too, like, it sounds like you're stealing from Caddyshack.
Oh, that's true. It was a Baby Ruth bar.
But Mounds, that's original.
Mounds. Well, Snickers is a funny word, though.
Mm-hmm.
Anything with a K is
funny.
Have
you ever worked that club?
Yeah, just did.
Snickers in Fort Wayne?
Snickers in Fort Wayne, and then I did Connections in Lansing.
Where their logo is basically the Snickers logo, except for they changed the S to a Z for copyright infringement purposes.
Is that true?
It looks like it.
I mean, it looks like
it's called Snickers, and it's the same lettering and everything. They just changed it.
Well, I mean, how many different... It's a standard lettering. It's not like Snickers had the copyright on the... Like, if it was Snickers and it was surrounded in the white thing.
It is.
Is it?
Yeah.
Really?
It is identical to a Snickers bar. And then also that club is so funny because it looks like a Swatch Watch threw up. Right? It's like
it's very bright.
Yeah, it looks like my Trapper Keeper from junior high, basically.
It is very the backdrop of the stage, it's like the skyline. It's like
Yeah, but the whole thing it's turquoise.
Yeah.
They even paint the lines in the parking lot turquoise in the parking spots. And then it's like everything's like checkered floors and, you know.
It's very 80s.
Triangular, triangular mirrors and stuff, you know.
We're officially back in traffic, by the way.
Yes, we are not moving.
We are now stopped.
All right, I'll see if someone can go next to me if I can interview them. We'll see.
We'll see when the moment comes up. But, yeah, I did Snickers. Did you do Lansing for Connections? Uh-uh. That place reminded me, the decor reminded me of, like, I don't know, like a den in my uncle's house, because it's all wood. It's like, it's very, whereas Snickers was 80s, Connections feel 70s, because it's very, there's a lot of wood. Apparently it's an old bowling alley that they converted, and somebody pointed out to pointed this out to me, that all the tables are old bowling lanes that they finished and made into tables, and the floors are all that.
Just like your uncle's house.
Well, it's just my uncle was a carpenter, so he had a lot of wood paneling in his his house, but wood was very 70s.
Got you.
You know, I think the wood thing became very big in the 70s, like Formica and all that shit. So it, I don't know, it just had that feel to me. Fun room, though, really fun room. Great staff.
So moral of the story is World Series of Comedy was fun and worthwhile.
Yes. Oh, by the way, this show, I didn't even tell you, this show that we do... podcast is very stream of conscious, so we're not going to stick on very many of the
topics. I like things tied up in a bow, Flip.
Well, you're on the wrong show, motherfucker. You so before we were talking about it, you actually traveled the country with your wife and kids in an RV.
I did, yeah. And fuck your stream of consciousness. I'm going to segue because I was at the World Series of Comedy 2 years ago. I met Sean Kent, and Sean was doing a small trip like that himself, or not small trip, but he was doing a little trip like that himself, and with his girlfriend and kids. And I was like, oh, man, my wife and I have always talked about doing that, but I just never think it was really realistic, you know, at this point in my career. And then I really started thinking about it that weekend, and then that was the week that I came in third, so I won a ton of work, you know. So I started booking it, and my wife and I started talking about it, and I was like, well, let's just go one step at a time. And then I started booking all this work, and I was able to book it geographically as well, like in order. And it just started coming together. So we made it happen. We found a renter for our house. We bought a travel trailer, 25-foot travel trailer. And we planned a four-month trip. We're going to move to L.A. That was kind of part of the point, too. So we left Miami, and we were going to go from Miami up through Canada, the Northwest, and then back down to L.A. And then I got into San Fran Festival. So we spent a month while I was competing at San Fran. So that turned into a five-month trip. And then we got to L.A., and we were like, oh, you know, we're not ready to really be out of the trailer. We're having fun. We're just getting good at it. So we actually lived in the trailer in L.A., mostly in Malibu, for a couple months. And then we decided we wanted to go across the country again. So all in all, we were in that thing for about a year and a half.
Wow.
With my two kids and my wife, and just traveling. We went coast to coast three times.
That is so fucking cool, man.
And I worked so much, too, man. It was so beneficial just professionally, like, just anyone who gave me a road date, I just took it, man, you know, and I didn't have to worry about if I was leaving them too often or whatever, because they just went with me.
Did you ever bring your kids into the clubs?
Yeah, especially during, you know, a lot of times we were staying somewhere close to the club, so we just pop in during the day, you know, especially some of the places where they'd give me a hotel, like St. Charles Zanies and stuff like that. Like, the club is connected to the resort, so, you know, you just walk over and walk in, and the kids like to play on the microphone. They tell jokes that make no sense, you know. And it's kind of cool, man. They can see what I do, you know. I'm not just disappearing and coming back 4 days later. Like, they can kind of see what my process is like, and now they know when I go on the road what Daddy's doing.
That's really cool, man.
Yeah, it worked out good, man. It could have gone either way. I knew that it would probably take about a month before this was a really good or really bad idea. Luckily, it went the right direction.
So your routing, you went from Miami.
So I went Miami.
Right.
If I can remember that far back. Basically, I went Miami, Tampa, Atlanta, Kentucky. And then we went up to her parents' house in Indiana, and I worked right all around there, like Chicago and Dayton, Ohio, and Indianapolis. And then went up to, like, Madison, Wisconsin, and up into Canada, and then we went across the top of the country to work, like, Seattle, Tacoma, Oregon, Vancouver.
Wow.
You know, and a couple other places around there, Idaho. And then we went down to San Fran Festival, and then I went down to Vegas, actually, and then went back up to San Fran to finish the festival, and then back down to L.A., and then we did a little, like, small trips from L.A. from there, you know, went to Vegas once and things like that. Up to San Luis Obispo. And then we decided to go across the country. So we went from L.A., across the bottom of the country to Iowa, across the Midwest again, down to North Carolina, Outer Banks.
Now, what about your kids with school? Were you guys, like, homeschooling them, or just said, fuck
school's it? Not important.
Thank you.
No, we homeschool, man. We homeschool. My wife was a teacher for 8 years, so. And he's smart as shit now. Like, he got so much more out of doing that. Not only that, man, but you go to Legoland, and they see, you know, like, the Las Vegas Strip and the Golden Gate Bridge, and, like, oh, we've been to those places. Like, they understand, they learn from being out, you know.
Like, how old are your kids now?
4 and 6. They were 2 and 4 when we started that.
That is, like, really great childhood memories.
Yeah, man.
I think that is really cool. You're like,
yeah, that's what I keep telling myself. I'm not damaging them. These are great memories for them.
They are. They really are. No, that's. I mean, how many kids get that opportunity, man?
Yeah, seriously. I mean, they've seen way more than the country than I had ever, you know, than I probably did by the time I was, you know, 30, you know?
Well, in that case, fuck them.
Yeah.
Fuck those little shits.
Oh, yeah.
Experiencing more than you ever did at 30.
I know, man. Who do they think they are?
I don't know. I don't know, David. And so you don't still have the trailer now, or do you?
No, we have it in storage. So we got a little place now in LA, and then we put it the trailer in storage. And we're gonna take a trip in a few weeks, kind of a vacation trip, and then we're gonna take it this summer for a little jaunt, probably up to Vancouver again and Seattle.
Excellent, man.
Mm-hmm.
Then when did you start comedy?
Started comedy about 10 years ago, I would say. I graduated college, and I was out of college for about a year, and then I chased my girlfriend, who's now my wife, up to Charlotte, North Carolina, and I started doing sketch comedy there. So I did 2 years of sketch comedy, and I did stand up maybe 3 or 4 times during that period. And then I moved back to Miami to go into the car business with my dad, and I didn't want to stop doing comedy, but I didn't have time to go to rehearsals and stuff. So I was like, well, let me just stick with stand up for a while, and I signed up for a contest at the West Palm Improv, and I won it. So then I was like, oh, man, this is fun. And then at the contest, this guy from the New York Comedy Club approached me. He says, hey, I'm not supposed to really be here, but I think you got something, kid. Would you like to host a weekend for me? And I was like, I am kicking this comedy thing's ass. This is so easy. I'm going to be huge. And then I went over and I emceed my first weekend, and it was an extreme dose of reality.
Mm-hmm.
And at least learned enough from that to know I liked stand-up a lot, and I stuck with it and did that in South Florida for about 5 or 6 years, and now I've been doing it full-time for about 4-ish.
You've been doing it with Forrest?
Yes, I've been doing it with Forrest, and I've been doing stand-up comedy full-time for 4-ish.
And you flourish?
Yes.
Do you flourish after 4-ish years with Forrest?
With fluoride.
Ah.
I'm trying to look for someone that we could try to interview.
Yeah. We've been crawling in this traffic, ladies and gentlemen. I say ladies and gentlemen because I know there are no children listening to this. So, Dave, if you could pick the top place you want to work in the world, country-wise, where would you want to go?
Just to go do a show, you mean? For like a week or something?
Yeah.
Well, everyone always brags about Australia.
Yeah, I hear that about Australia, too.
Obviously, it's a cool place to be. But also, you know, the comedy, like, they really are receptive to comedy. I'm a little intimidated, man. I mean, I've done a little stuff outside the comfort zone of just straight up, you know, traditional American audiences. I've done the Caribbean a few times, and I've certainly done places in the United States that feel like they're somewhere else. but I don't know, man. I would welcome it, but to go to, like, Japan or somewhere and do your stuff. I mean, you've done a lot of that over in, like, Finland and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, Scandinavia.
You just do your normal stuff? I mean, obviously, you maybe tweak it a little bit, but...
Yeah, I mean, funny's funny. Yeah. The only thing that you got to do is make sure you don't have any specific American, like, pop culture references.
Yeah.
But, like, anything about relationships, everybody's in relationships, everybody has kids, everybody has... You know, everybody travels and flies. It's like general stuff will always work. They, over there, at least, they have this a lot. They get the same movies. They have some American TV shows.
Yeah, so you can do your whole Baywatch bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would think that, actually, yeah. Now that you say that, maybe it's even more relatable because they appreciate the fact that someone from a completely different culture is going through the same.
Oh yeah.
You know, zany thing with their relationship or whatever. You know?
Well, they appreciate the fact that above and beyond. Above all, that we're there.
Yeah.
You know, that, oh, my God, somebody from America is coming over here. Because stand-up comedy over in Scandinavia, like when I first went back in 2006, it was still very new. It was this concept that people were really drawn to, but they weren't familiar with. I think at the time when I went to Stockholm for the first time, there wasn't a comedy club in the country. There might have been one.
Mm-hmm.
It was just such, like I said, this such new... idea. And I know that comedy has definitely grown exponentially over there, like in Sweden and Finland and Norway. I was actually there in, was I there in 08, I think, and they had in Finland, and they had like a comedy festival there, which was a blast. But yeah, they really respond to it. They love it. They respect it. It's over there. It's like how comedy was here in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Just that big boom.
I got to get me some of that action.
Get you some of that Scandinavian comedy.
Yeah.
Get your asshole with the Swede. I actually came up with this joke about Sweden. I go, because they're very still very tight about marijuana. Like, they think it's just very, like, class one narcotic kind of thing.
Yeah, the devil.
Yeah, yeah. And I go, you know, I find that ironic just for the fact that the word weed is in the name of your country, Sweden. You take the weed out of Sweden, all you got is sin. And as long as you're going to sin, smoke some fucking weed.
Ah.
And I go, you live in Sweden, you don't smoke weed? That's like living in China and hating really nice plates. Or living in Russia but taking your time.
Oh.
Living in Finland but hating the end of French movies.
Keep going.
That's all I got.
Oh, okay.
But do you have any more?
No. Oh, I'm...
Come on, tag the bit. Keep tagging it.
I'll think of one like in 10 minutes from now and just shout it out.
Okay, good. That's called comedy Tourette's.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's great over there. Like, that's the thing. Like, a lot of...
That's like being from France but hating running in past tense. Huh?
What?
There's a ran, the word ran. No, okay.
Oh, what? No. 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 That's Christopher Walken. No.
I thought it was pretty good. I apologize to everyone that we're doing this with a mouthful of pretzels. I don't know if you guys can pick up on that at home. Pretzels in traffic.
Yeah, this is... By the way, folks, if you... I think I even mentioned this with when David Gee was in the car. If we weren't recording this, this would still be a normal comedian's conversation.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's what's like... Like, we were just at this... we stopped at the Whiskey Pete's in Prim to get something to eat. And it's, you know, and this place is also like a truck stop kind of thing.
Whiskey Pete's. It's called Whiskey Pete's, but it's decorated like a...
Like a castle.
A castle from medieval times. So that makes sense.
I think it's because... I was telling him, I think there was once a King Peter who had an advisor who he was very close to, and he also had a lisp. And when King Peter said, I want to invade, the advisor says, I wouldn't whisk it, Pete. Whisk it, Pete.
Hilarious. I get
this
it.
Is why I guess I don't win the World Series of Comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like being from Spain, but not being hurt. Closer?
Yeah, closer.
All right.
Closer. You'll get it. You'll find it. What I was saying, though, is like, so we're at this truck stop, and I don't know, like, if you ever think about this when you're driving on the road, but, like, right now there's a couple of trucks just right next to us, and you think of a truck driver's life. You think of, like, truck driver getting his truck and just driving across the country all the time, hauling shit, and just probably most of the time by himself, sleeping in the back of his rig and everything, and... There's a little bit I think that we can relate to as a comic.
Yeah.
Like that, but there's a whole. My point is like there's a whole lifestyle with these truckers. There's a lifestyle we will never understand. The same way people look at us.
I find like subculture so fascinating. Like it's all right. So for example, I'm a big water polo fan. Like I played water polo growing up, and I coached for several years.
Gay.
And it's crazy that. Yeah, but you're proving my point there. It's like, it's so important to me. Like, I give a shit about, like, which high school beat which high school in Fort Lauderdale, Florida on one particular season. Like it matters to me. And to me, like, in my head, I've been around it so long, it feels like it's a big part of everybody's life. I'm like, what do you mean you don't care about that? But then all of a sudden you start thinking about it, you're like, nobody gives a shit. About it, like, you know, it's like doesn't affect anyone's life except for us people who are so
into it. Yeah,
yeah. Like we see it on a day in day out basis, and there's so many, even like the RV thing. Like I knew nothing about that world. I didn't even know that many campsites existed. And then once you get into it, now all of a sudden you start paying attention, and you're like, holy shit, there's campsites everywhere. And there's a Camping World, these big like Walmart superstore camping centers. Oh, yeah. There's one on like every exit across the Midwest, you know. And it's like it's just it's own culture. That's.
Did you like when you camped in the RV parks? Mm-hmm. Was it like how they show it at some of these wacky comedies where there's a family? Oh hey, you guys going cross country too?
Yeah. We definitely made some friends like that. I mean, some places people kind of keep to themselves, and other places it's very open like that, you know. But definitely met some characters, met some people that we will stay friends with forever, and met some other people that were terrifying.
Like, how so?
Well, the scariest thing we came across was actually we'd made it all the way across the country, and then we got to L.A., and we were staying in Dockweiler by the airport.
Okay.
And there was a legit meth lab pulled in two spots away from us.
Really?
And so we were, like, the only ones in the little section, so it was just us in the meth lab. And it was, I basically Googled how to spot a meth lab. I started reading the list and I'm like, multiple propane bottles. Yep. And it's like everything that was on there, I like could see, like, you know, so like a smell kind of like sulfur. I'm like, okay. Swastika tattoos on their chest. Yep.
Really?
Yeah, man.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, it was terrifying. And they had, I didn't realize it until about the second day, but they had like 8 pit bulls, crated up inside the thing. And this is the thing too, is that these people were obviously not camping. Like, they didn't have like camping, like, you didn't have like a little like table and chair set up where you sit outside. It was obviously like that thing was there for operational purposes, and yet they had like 8 propane bottles going in and out of that place. So it's like, I don't think they are starting their own cupcake business and they're baking, you know, or at least they're not baking cupcakes.
So what did you do?
I finally called the cops. Well, I texted the LAPD. You can text the LAPD, and the LAPD kept asking me all these questions. And it was just freaking me out. I'm like, just drive over here. You're going to bust them. Trust me. And I think that they actually ended up leaving before anyone came.
Too bad. Were you hoping to see the cops?
No, I didn't want nothing to do with it. Because if that place blew up, it was going to take my house, my truck house with it. That's what Al Jackson's kid calls my RV.
Truck house?
Yeah.
Wait, is it, I'm sorry, is it attached to your car?
So it's a travel trailer. It's like you pull it behind, we have a Chevy Tahoe,
yeah,
and you pull it behind. It's like a motorhome on wheels, basically, you know? Or a
but it's not the kind, like, you can, you drive the actual
car. No.
Okay.
No, those were out of the budget. But you set it up, and then it's there, and then I detach my truck, and I drive my truck back and forth to the club or whatever.
That's really cool. Allison and I were talking about wanting to do that, just renting an RV and just fucking going all around.
You guys, I mean, it would make a lot of sense, especially since you guys, you know, you don't have kids and you're both, you know, road comics. You could get, they make really neat, like, small ones even, you know, that are very comfortable. I mean, you don't need much other than a place to sleep and a place to cook, because once you get set up, I mean, you pretty much have a picnic table and a little awning and everything outside. You just kind of hang out, you know. And they make very small little aerodynamic ones that you can just pull with a small SUV. You might even be able to pull with this thing.
With this?
Yeah.
With S-H-I-T?
With this Mack truck that we're in right now.
Yes.
These ladies are eating crackers very intensely next to us.
Traffic is always a good place to people watch.
Yeah.
We didn't interview anybody. Looks like we're starting to speed up a little bit. But that sounds like a really cool, really cool way of doing it. Like, I knew another comic named Chris Penny. I'd met him when I was, it was like around 99 when I first met him in Florida. I was still living down there, and he was a road comic. And he was telling me that he and his wife lived in a camper, an RV, and drove around the country. And she did some kind of work where she could do it from a computer.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's,
yeah, most of those places have Wi-Fi and, you know, nice facilities. I mean, it's not like you're, like, a lot of my friends would be like, when they found out we were in town, they'd be like, do you want to come over to our house and use our air conditioning and our Wi-Fi and our, you know, and our showers? And I'm like, we've had air conditioning. Like, we're okay. Like, you know.
Do you have a shower in there too?
Yeah, yeah, man. I have full everything. It's like living in a yacht, kind of. Like, you have a shower. It's a small shower, but it's a shower. And,
would you have to empty the toilet and everything?
Yeah, you got to empty your own shit tank every now and then. And at first it was terrible, but then I got pretty good at it and pretty used to doing it.
And I know this, by the way, we are way off the subject of comedy, but where do you dump the shit?
Well, most places have like a little hole in the ground, like a little pipe that you just hook up to.
Okay.
And then you just dump it right there. If not, then, if they don't have it in each individual campsite, then they usually have, like, one main one. So just as you're pulling in or out of the campsite, you just stop and unload, if you will.
And is it, it's, I assume it smells like,
It's shit that's been sitting in a tank. Yeah, it's terrible. I did have one or two instances where I spilled it.
Ah!
And
Ah!
had to quickly hose it away before I got caught, because they'll fine you for that.
How much spilt? Like chunks?
Yeah, I had I had one incident where a lot came out. Got on my hands and stuff.
Oh, God. As he touches my shoulder. That's what, see, you know, like, I want to be a dad. I'm getting that. I'm really feeling like I'm ready and everything. But my brother has a daughter, my niece, and I've never changed a diaper in my life.
Oh, yeah, man.
I watched him. I'm just too nervous to try. I'm like, I don't want to get duty on me, and I don't want to fuck them up or anything.
Man, there's this thing that happens when you have kids where is, like, poop just becomes such not a big deal. And I think that there's it's maybe nature and God designed it this way, where it all kind of happens at once. But I feel like everything happens. So you're sleep deprived when you first have the baby, and you're just in this zombie mode of like learning and being nervous about doing everything right. You know, like, you check when you have your first kid, like, you check to make sure he's breathing like every 5 minutes. You know, you're just like, I'm gonna screw this up. And then diaper change. You got to change the diaper, and you do a terrible job, but you know the baby doesn't know any different. And then you're just so sleep deprived, you're just going through the motions. And then next thing you know, you've been doing it for a while, and you're good at it. You know, I could change a diaper like that now. But the second kid, you're a pro, man. We were on an airplane, and my first son had a blowout, like, you know, like, was shit up the back of his diaper, and it was a real juicy one. Okay. We couldn't leave our seats. I mean, I just grabbed this blanket and just wrapped the shit out of him, started rocking him so he'd stop crying and trying to keep the stink from going all over the airplane, you know? And then we took off, and my wife went into the bathroom, and bada boom, bada bing, got them all cleaned up. It's amazing what you can do with wipes. You get good at it, man. Shit becomes a part of your life.
I'm not sure how to react to that.
Yeah.
Shit becomes a part. I guess so. Like, I hear just from a lot of parents that just exactly what you said. It becomes second nature. It's just like, yeah, it's poop. Whatever.
Yeah.
You wipe it on your, you get a little on your hand, you wipe it on your jeans.
It was funny, man. I don't know if it was like something, like, I got really like desensitized to it. So poop didn't bother me at all. And then when we had my second kid, he was maybe about, you know, like 7 months old or something.
Mm-hmm.
And out of nowhere, for whatever reason, I just all of a sudden started getting really disgusted by poop again. I think I had my gallbladder taken out, and I don't know if that like somehow jacked up my chemical balances or something, but like I'd be changing his diaper, and as I'm changing, it wouldn't be even a bad one. And as I'm changing his diapers, I'm just like, bleh! You know, just like, bleh! He's laughing at me doing that. I'm like, don't move. Bleh!
You sadistic little fuck.
Yeah.
Did you?
So don't. Yeah. If you want to be a dad, don't let things like that deter you, because that kind of shit, you just figure out.
Yeah, I was gonna say if I go, yeah, I'd like to have a kid, except for all the poop.
Yeah.
Then I don't think I'd be a good parent to begin with. But I guess it's just one of those natural, normal, nervous kind of fears.
Of course.
You know, it's also the financial end of it and the emotional end of it. But
those are big ends.
Pretty big ends. You know, how much weed can I give the kid?
Yeah. I can't give you any insight on that.
That was a joke. Don't call CPS, people. You did that bit. Did you do that bit about changing your kid when he could talk?
Yeah.
That's a funny fucking bit, man.
Yeah, it's been hitting really hard, and I wasn't planning on doing it, but I finished my set a little early since there wasn't a lot of laughs. And I'm like, all right, man, I need to squeeze. I could squeeze that one. And I really rushed through it, too. It's much longer and drawn out, but I squeezed it in there real quick. But, yeah, that's been.
That's true?
Yeah, for the most part. Well, no, it's not true that he said those things, but it is true that it's insulting once they start talking. And then you're changing their diaper, and then they're like. Before, when you change your diaper, and they're just going like. Then you think they're like. Trying to say stuff like, I love you, Daddy. Thank you for doing this for me. But then also when they actually can talk and you're changing the diaper and they're just like, you know, like Daddy, change diaper. Like, yeah, I know what I'm doing. You're rubbing it in now, you know? Like, definitely changes the dynamic.
Of the experience.
Yeah.
How old were you when you became a dad?
Like 30, somewhere around there.
Yeah, I am definitely out of that proper age window.
Hey, man, these days, I don't think it's a big deal, man.
Yeah, I guess. No, it's like, you know what it is? It's almost like when you're a kid, you watch how your parents did it, and it's just ingrained in you, like, okay, that's the way you need to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't think of an opposite way of living my life than my parents did, you know, as far as what I'm doing. Like, my brother, he's in his mid-30s. His daughter just turned 4. You know, he's got the little house in Florida. He's got the guy's job. Actually, he's in education like my parents were. And I look at him and I'm like, you know, he's stable. He's doing it like my parents did. And I look at me, I'm in my late 30s. I'm still renting an apartment in Burbank. I'm married to a comic who also legally sells marijuana. You know, I'm on the road all the time. It's just like a completely don't have any kids yet. Completely different lifestyle.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's valid that you do think when you're younger that you can that you have to follow the same path. It's just because that's the blueprint that's been most evident to you, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, whether it's true or not, we also think that it's the blueprint that works, because we all think that, you know, our parents were probably perfect when we know now as adults that nobody is, you know? So, yeah, I mean, I did the same thing, though, man. I had, you know,
excuse me.
Yeah, are you all right? Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, I got married and had kids, and I had a career and bought a nice house and was living, you know, a few blocks from where I grew up in my parents' house. And I decided it wasn't working for me, man. You know, circumstances changed, and I was getting far enough along in the comedy thing, and I knew that's where my heart was. And if you're not happy doing what you're doing, it doesn't matter if you attain all those things, dude.
Just, oh, totally. No,
you're not going to be the right dad or the right husband, you know?
I was going to say, don't get me wrong. I don't want to do that path. I knew I was going to do this since I was 8 years old.
Yeah.
It was never even a question for me.
Thanks to that gypsy fortune teller, right?
No, first time I did stand-up, I was 8.
No, I know. I'm just teasing.
Gypsy fortune teller.
It's a joke.
How do your parents feel about you doing comedy?
They're very supportive.
Oh, that's good.
I think that the first few years, my dad was confused because he was like, wait, you're going to go down there and they're paying you how much? And I'm like, nothing, but they let me do 5 minutes. My dad's like, why, you know? And but then I think later on when I started winning, like, you know, some stuff, and, you know, he actually saw that I was talented at it, and, you know, I was getting some recognition. They got very supportive. And then it was kind of hard not to be supportive when, like, because we were in the car business. So I was running a Saturn store. So when the whole government bailout happened, and it all of a sudden did not seem like a very lucrative path to be in the car business at that point in time. So it kind of really made it easy for me to go, all right, I'm going to go give comedy a chance for a year, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I came up with a financial plan. And then, you know, after a year, it was easy to see that, you know, it's what I needed to be doing. I was way happier. You know, I had to kind of figure it out as far as...
It's a really kind of wonderful epiphany when it all clicks.
Mm-hmm.
When you go, this is what I'm supposed to do. This is what I'm here for. An even bigger one, when you have that moment where you go, oh, and this is the kind of comedian that I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think when everybody starts... we're all very much a blank slate, borrowing from whatever influences we have, whether it be other comics that we've admired, people that we know who are funny, and we're just like cherry picking the best of those things, just trying to find our own voice. But when you do, when you suddenly go like, oh, this is how I'm just being me up on stage, and it has nothing to do with pretense or trying to force anything, it's that really wonderful feeling, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And even just being in LA, like, I'm like, for so long I was like, man, you know, I feel like that's where I need to be to get to the next step, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then just finally, we've been talking about it for so long, just to finally now be here, it's like such a weight off the shoulders. And the one thing I really like people keep asking me now if I like being in LA. And the thing I really do like about being in LA is that any given night when you go out to do a bar show, or if you don't even have a spot, you just go by, you know, the Improv or somewhere to hang out, that you're around like-minded people who are giving it their all and doing things to, you know, to move their career forward, as opposed to, you know, anywhere else. Chances are, if you go out and hang out with comics at a bar show in Miami, Florida, there's going to be some of your buddies who are think like you, but there's going to be a lot of people who are like bitching about what they're not getting, and you know.
Well, you'll get a lot of those in LA too.
You will, but there's more. There's more of the other kind of people to counteract it.
Yeah,
you can
totally
surround yourself with the ones you want to.
I know bitter people really kind of dampen the whole love of it. You know, a lot of people forget that it's a journey and it's about having fun, you know?
Yeah, man. Dude, if you know, if it all went to shit tomorrow, I don't regret doing this industry or you know, trying to follow this career up to this point. I mean, it's been fun along the way, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas if you're doing some other day job, if you're an accountant or whatever and you don't like it, but you're just trying to get to that light at the end of the tunnel, well, you know what? If it goes to shit with that, you're going to regret the past, you know, 12 years you spent your life doing it.
Exactly. Exactly. Got to make sure you're on the path to happiness.
Yep.
I was going to say, speaking of bitter pricks, that a segue or what? It's time for a little part of the podcast, Dave. You ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
It's called The Skippy Green Show.
It's the Skippy Green Show.
Dave Williamson, how are you?
Oh, Skippy, I didn't know you were in the back seat.
Yeah. Flip likes to keep me under the seat, so whenever a woman sits back here, I got a great spot.
Oh, fantastic,
yeah. You know what I mean? Just like, oh, like a hippopotamus yawning. You know what I mean? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, since you just did the hand gesture while you said it, I do.
I did. All right, Dave, you ready, kiddo?
Okay, yes. For whatever we're doing, I'm ready.
Answer the following question. In 10 words, exactly.
Okay.
Not 11, not 9, 10 words exactly. You ready?
Born ready.
If you could fuck in any RV camp across the country, what state would that camp be in and why?
Huh. That's a weird one, Skippy.
Well, I'm a weird guy.
Make
it good. No pressure.
All right. If I can make love to my wife at any RV camp.
Make love.
Across the country.
Not talking about making...
I would choose Wisconsin because... afterward, I could get cheese.
Perfect.
It's the Skippy Green Show.
Awesome.
Did he just climb back into the trunk?
He did. Get the back in.
He just...
shut the fuck up. I'm back here already.
That's crazy.
He's a quick guy.
He just lives back there,
He lives in my car.
Back seat just folds down.
He actually has an entire suite in the back of this car.
Oh, like, you go in and it's really like 2,000 square feet?
Yeah, and it's all like... like
a heart-shaped like bed.
Heart-shaped bed, shag carpeting. It's
bubble bath.
He's got a velvet painting of him riding Joan Rivers like a horse.
That sounds sexy.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, that's traditionally where the show, where we kind of wrap it up with that.
Yeah, I'm certain no one's still listening at this point. Of us in traffic.
You know what?
It's like the worst place ever. It's like, well, let's invite people into this world of traffic.
We have very loyal listeners here. And last week, one of the listeners asked me to play a song, which I did. So that was to them.
All right. That's a good story, Flip. Thanks.
They didn't have a point. It was just saying we have listeners.
All right. I know I believe you.
Glad you believe me. Dave, where can people see you, man?
Well,
you find out all your stuff.
Check out my website at DaveWilliamsonComedy.com. One of these days I'll get around to activating DaveWilliamson.com, but until then. And then Twitter, at DaveWComedy. Nice. And at my website, you can also link to my other social media.
Excellent, man.
I'll be in San Diego soon. And I'll be in Montana next week, and probably Vegas again soon.
Excellent. Well, guys, go and check David out at his website. Incredibly funny, and I really do mean that. And as a Florida guy, I love it when there's great talent still coming out of Florida, man.
Yeah, a lot lately. And a lot of guys coming out lately.
So I'm very very proud to be part of that lineage, man.
Thank you, Papa Flip.
You are
welcome, son, you are.
And guys, don't forget, you know where you can get me, all on the flipisfunny.com, whatfordinnerpodcast.com, at Flip Schultz on Twitter. All my CDs available on iTunes and Amazon, including Skippy Green's CD, Lick My Balls. And I guess we will see you guys next week. Hopefully we'll be back in the studio, not driving in a car, as has been the the norm as of late. This is actually the third car podcast I've done in the past like month.
Just keep going with that. Like, do one in a submarine next week.
Ooh, next maybe week, submarine podcast.
Maybe on a roller coaster.
Oh, I like that. Roller podcast.
Hot air balloon.
Balloon cast. Give me more.
I don't know.
Come on.
On a Vespa scooter.
We're going to scoot cast.
I like it.
There'll be many more casts coming up, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing the time with us in the drive. We'll see you next week. Bye.
What's for dinner? What's for dinner? What's for dinner?
Talking about what's ever on their minds. Talking about what's ever on their minds.